Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Welcome in, time for Daily Editorial. It is Wednesday, 10:59 a.m. in the morning, and it is February 22nd. Got three very interesting topics that we're going to discuss right now, topics that I think are critical to the future of America. And those topics happen to be, number one, the major reorganization that just occurred in Project Veritas, which I think is a very important organization. Number two, the general tone of saber-rattling around the world. Are we right around the corner from a war, or are cooler heads going to prevail? Jimmy, let's talk about Project Veritas first.
Yeah, so James O'Keefe, he basically is Project Veritas. He's a conservative activist, and he started a 501c3 nonprofit organization and a 501c4 nonprofit organization, in order to put together Project Veritas. Project Veritas has been one of the few remaining news organizations, if you will, that have actually outed leftist activities or basically focused on conservative issues to undermine or basically discredit or to point out fraud in the Democratic Party and other progressive entities. There's very few left. You know, 60 Minutes used to do the same techniques that Project Veritas does. They used to do, you know, hidden cameras and on the spot, on the street type of interviews. And that's what Veritas has done. And what they did just recently was they outed a very senior individual at Pfizer who was responsible for mRNA research type activities.
Jim, define mRNA research, would you please?
Well, basically the Pfizer company has been pushing forward this mRNA mitochondrial, or the way to inject, just simplified, a new method of building vaccines where they're sending in RNA, messenger RNA, ribonucleic acid, in order to tell your body to do a certain thing. And basically what this Pfizer executive said was they were doing research with, and this is in undercover videos from Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, doing research to enhance the lethality or the danger of these these viruses like COVID-19 in order to build new vaccines that would counter them, which would seem like something out of a spy novel or something out of a...
It really would seem like something out of a spy novel, Jim. I mean, you really have to kind of scratch your head and wonder, why do you need a vaccine to eliminate the negative effects of an existing vaccine? Why would you even put that existing vaccine among the public?
Well, I think, you know, the whole idea is make more money, right?
And, of course.
I mean, this was the plot of a Mission Impossible film, I think the second one, where, you know, a company builds a very dangerous disease and then builds the antidote for it and then sells it to make a fortune. And of course, I think the movie, what was it called? The British movie in 2006 that kind of outlined the same thing. Anyway, very sinister type of actions, but
they really are, yeah.
Project Veritas outed this guy, and it was the huge, you know, a video viewed on Twitter. Actually, the most watched Project Veritas video ever. But the board members of Project Veritas immediately began to try to take over and get James O'Keefe out of Project Veritas.
And why was that, Jim?
We don't know exactly why. They're claiming that it was some misuse of funds for the organization. That's what their justification is. But it looks like the guy that kind of orchestrated this is, I believe his name is Michael Tiermond. He on the board of these nonprofit organizations, which the 501c3 and 501c4 for Project Veritas. He orchestrated this takeover in order to push James O'Keefe out, probably, and this is speculation, probably at the behest of Pfizer. or other influential players out there that are trying to keep silence and to silence Project Veritas and what their actions are. For whatever reason, down deep, my guess is there's probably some money go along behind the scenes with this. I imagine there's probably some other very nefarious actions here by big media and big corporations in order to silence people that are showing the corruption out there in our system and potentially what they're doing to threaten people's future and their lives. Certainly the Pfizer issue is a big one.
Well, that is a real big one. It's going on for a long time, and that brings it has been going on, I should say, for a long time. And that brings up the million-dollar question. What do you think is going to happen to Anthony Fauci, Jim? I mean, he's a big player.
He is, and I certainly hope that as we get more information publicly through investigations, that's what probably the most important investigation, I believe, in human history will be the House, the Republican-controlled House, actually getting to the bottom of how the government handled COVID, how they silenced and censored very important and very esteemed doctors who were questioning their narrative.
Yeah.
And, of course, as we get more and more information that masks don't work, that the mRNA vaccine has a lot of dangers. It's not safe. It's not effective because it doesn't stop the flow. And then of the amount of money that was poured into these pharmaceutical companies, tremendous amount of corruption, but damage to the world, to the whole world, based on this level of corruption. And then the government getting involved in censoring people's questioning respected scientists, but also the narratives that are out there. These are important questions if they're not dealt with. And of course, Project Veritas is one little part of opening the books and being transparent about these problems. That's why I'm sure why they've been attacked, why James O'Keefe was pushed out.
Yeah.
And I think if we don't have this transparency, then we're all going to be the slaves to the tech industry. We're going to be digital slaves.
Why would you say that, Jimmy?
Well, I think as they get more control with information, with AI, when the digital dollar is somehow enacted at some point, the government, who will be trying to stay in power with the power of information flow through these tech companies and media companies, will counter anything that anybody says. It's just the way the authoritarian system works in order to keep their power. And as they do that, we become... You keep your mouth shut or you lose your money or you lose your retirement.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, this happened in Canada.
You think it's that serious right now?
It happened in Canada.
Yeah.
It happened in Canada over the trucker protest, the horn honking in Ottawa.
Yeah.
The government got involved in shutting down people's bank accounts in that country. And if they did back off after a while because, they got a lot of publicity, negative publicity about it, but if they control the information, then individuals will just be, again, you'll just be a digital slave. And that's what we're facing right now. People like James O'Keefe and other, Breitbart News and some of these other news organizations, Andrew Breitbart started his organization to counter the leftist narrative, progressive narrative. These, he ends up dead in a strange way. You get all kinds of these very powerful, influential, major corporations with tons of money. And we're talking tens and hundreds of billions of dollars at stake. How far are they willing to go to silence opposition? And how much control are they willing to have over your life in order to protect in cooperation with government entities in order to control a narrative? We've seen it with the FBI. We've seen it with the Department of Justice. And of course, any potential conservative view has been silenced on Google, on YouTube, in the media, and people have been called conspiracy theorists when it turns out that most of that information that many of these very educated and astute doctors came out on COVID has been true.
Yeah.
It's a very dangerous time for human history. And if we don't get to the bottom of it, if there's not transparency and people wake up to what's happened here, we will be crushed by big tech and this information control in order to appease the global, financiers of the world.
Jimmy, we've been talking about this particular subject for an awful long time right now. And we've centered out, we've called out a couple of fairly well-known people, Jeff Bezos for one, and Bill Gates for two. And, you know, you really have to wonder what would motivate people like Bezos and Gates, who got to be plenty smart. What would actually push them in a direction of taking this type of what I would call very aggressive, very serious action?
Well, there's two reasons.
Okay.
One is money. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, he did it for money, right? To expand his market. Jeff Bezos, definitely, you know, with Amazon to expand their market. Bill Gates to expand their market. Google, Alphabet to expand their market opportunities. You know, these are some of the most capitalized corporations in the world.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of influence. It's about selling information, selling data, and they want that control. The second part, so that's one part. It's about the power and the money. The other part is really about hubris. Their belief that their views of the world are better than others and that they can control the system because they are so smart,
yeah,
that they're so capable. Bill Gates thinks that he's got answers to solutions to, you know, answers and solutions to every problem on the face of the earth. And that's a lie. It's false. It's a false narrative. He's another human being like you and me, and he does not have all the answers. He may be a smart guy, but he should not be dictating everyone else's future. George Soros should not be dictating other people's future. These major corporations should not be controlling information in order to achieve their not only power, but their view of how the world should look. And that's what we're facing right now, those two problems.
Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about Soros. I've read a number of Soros books on economics, and I think they're pretty good. I've read some of his other books where they're what I would call biographies. I suppose like advertorials, the writers were certainly painting a wonderful picture of Mr. Soros and his son Alexander, but why would he be interested? I can understand why he would be interested in shaping the outcome of various political elections, but why in the heck would he be interested in a disease like COVID and potential cures, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, again, it's money and power. It's control. If you have a justification and excuse to get more control over people, COVID's a perfect case for that.
Yeah.
And once you have control over people, once you have people that are afraid, they're going to bow to their views. And, you know, and he comes from, look, he was a World War II kid that, you know, had some very weird background. You know, he's actually publicly stated that, you know, he's got some strange views. 60 Minutes tape, I think, in the 80s, I believe.
Yeah.
Actually, I believe it was in the 90s. I can't remember exactly, but you know, there's some real questions about what he is as a human being and how much control he'd like. And he's not. It's not just George Soros. There's many people that work together in order to achieve what they think is a better future. This entire Green New Deal, this entire push towards cutting back fossil fuels, is a method of control using the internet tools, using the search tools, using the algorithms in order to silence opposition to your positions is a tool. And that, of course, increases power and it helps you achieve your goal, which is basically, I know better than you, so I'm going to manage you. This is how kings worked in the past.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing right now is an attempt at this kind of authoritarian state and system where a small group of intellectual elite think that they can manage the world and they know how to better. And no matter what happens down below, they're not really that worried about it because they're flying their private jets and they're going to New Zealand and hiding out in their caves if necessary. But for the most part, they're living really well and they can care less about you. This is perfectly, you know, consistent with Al Gore and his ideology that, you know, the world's coming to an end, but I'll pay my with my, you know, millions and millions of dollars I've gained off of, you know, fabricating fear in people's minds over, you know, climate change and global warming and the ozone collapse. I'll pay my dues, but I still get to live the way I want, my 10,000 square foot house and fly my private jet.
Yeah. I don't know. Your latter summary, I think, is right on. Everybody wants to be the prettiest baby in the nursery, and I don't think either George Soros or any of the others really much care how they get to that position. They want to go down in history as an individual who changed society for the better. But, you know, conservatives don't really feel like conservatives like you and I don't really feel that Soros, et cetera, is changing the environment for the better. Let's go from here, Jimmy. Let's swing over to the potential war in the Ukraine. We were discussing that this morning at breakfast. I think it's a very interesting subject. I always poo-pooed the idea of the Ukraine ever maturing into a full-blown conflict, you know, what I would call a shooting war, et cetera, involving all the countries of the world. It seems to be happening right now, though, Jim.
Well, I mean, there's no question that, Western NATO member weaponry and many others, apparently there's about 54 members of the coalition that are supporting Ukrainian military forces defend against the Russian invasion and assault. So they're using those weapons. There's probably some special operations and intelligence people that are on the ground supporting what's happening out there. That's probably why the Ukrainians are having very effective fires, as well as some of the advanced munitions, Excalibur 155 rounds and some of these other anti-armor rounds that have been able to really slow, if not stop, any potential Russian offensive, which is now, probably going into a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So will it expand to a bigger shooting war? Russia would have to be, look, they have lost, by actual pictured evidence, they've lost close to 3,000, if not more, tanks. They've lost more than 6,000 armored vehicles. They've lost thousands of artillery pieces. These are that's like 25% of their overall defense capabilities.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have the military capacity to take on NATO members directly. And of course, the potential and the fear that everybody has out there of nuclear war, it doesn't make tactical sense for them. And it certainly does, because they'd have to clean up the mess if they won.
Yeah.
When I say won, there is no one winning in this.
No
system.
One wins in it. No, no one but wins in a nuclear conflict, huh?
That's right, and no one. And what that would mean is that would immediately bring in other, NATO members, because of the potential for cross-border radioactive materials and the damage and the human rights. There's so many bad potential outcomes of that way. I just doubt that Putin himself would think about that.
I felt exactly the same way, but a lot of Republicans right now, not Republicans, sorry, a lot of Democrats right now are feeling that we are just on the brink of a worldwide crisis. I don't think so. I think that's a wasted mental exercise.
Well, I think we're in a worldwide crisis. This has tremendous impacts, but we're not on the brink of nuclear war.
And that's what I was talking about, Jim. Yeah, I mean, that certainly is a worldwide crisis. There's no question about that. But you know who I think the hero would be from the East to settle things down? I think the hero might be Xi Jinping. I think he would basically get together with Putin, and he would say, "You're crazy. We're not going to allow you to do that." I mean, it's just too devastating in terms of the results, Jim.
Well, yeah, right. There's no winner in a nuclear war.
No.
Putin would not succeed. The West, everyone would suffer. There's no good outcome from it.
Right.
And Xi's not going to go ahead and stop him from doing that, because I really believe
don't
that
you
Xi
think so?
And the
you
and
really
the
don't think so?
No, I think Xi and the CCP are actually somewhat laughing as the Russians do this. I mean, they're a little bit worried because they're realizing that the weapon systems that the Russians have used are getting basically decimated by Western technology.
Right.
So, with a really small, relatively weak military that, they're getting crushed. So that makes the Taiwan scenario for China a little bit more complex. So they're worried about that. But at the same time, they're also supporting Russia in the background with both resources, buying energy and those types of things, potentially with weapons over time. But we'll see what happens with it, because ultimately the Chinese and the Russians are no friends to each other.
No, they're not. And they never have been.
Huge opportunity for China if Russia is weakened and cannot defend the Russian Far East.
Right.
All those natural resources, all that gas and oil, all those minerals that are out in the Far East, all are there for the taking if the Russians can't support that. As they lose this much hardware and credibility in the world, and over time, the economic impact will be significant. That puts them in a very precarious situation. And Putin actually realized that.
Of course he does. Of course he does. I mean, Putin made a huge mistake, in my opinion, when he basically attempted to take over Ukraine. It hasn't been simplified yet. We've got no results yet. The only thing we know is Ukraine and Volodymyr Zelensky is considered to be an absolute hero in the eyes of the world. And I know a lot of our bloggers are going to disagree with that because they don't think he's such a good guy. But let me tell you, the NATO countries, citizens of most of the NATO countries, citizens of other groups of countries really feel like this comedian from Ukraine is really doing a good job. And he sure as hell is holding the country together, Jim.
There's a lot of problems there. It's under intense pressure. And, of course, right, they're losing tremendous number of troops and equipment. And they would not survive without U.S. support. They'd fade very rapidly. So with all that, he still is, and regardless of what people think about him, he still is very popular with his own people.
Right.
They are very motivated to defend themselves against what's happening right here. And that's just reality.
Yeah, it is
but
reality.
The other part of this, though, that people have to realize is, you know, we're at a year now. You know, it's within 2 days of being a year-long conflict, and Russia has not made gains. They've lost ground. If you go and look at what happened for the month when they were attempting to get to Kiev, it's a very ugly story because
yes, it is.
Of breakdown in communications, breakdown in logistics, inability to maneuver, bad planning. And you're seeing similar problems as they attempt this offensive in the east. And, of course, you know, they're having some very big morale problems. And there was no real answer from Putin's speech. What this means is Putin knows if he loses this politically, he's in a very bad position. If he has to quit, he's in a
huge,
bad position.
Huge,
he's already lost it.
Hugely negative, of course.
So what people need to worry about, the more my concern is the deeper worry of what happens if there's destabilization in the Kremlin in Moscow with some other forces, either extremists, because there are many, many conservative extremists or right wing or whatever you want to call them, or that are calling for bombing London.
What in God's name is the point of bombing London? Poland,
well, they believe
okay.
that they're a threat and that this is a NATO attack. So that's the ridiculous. But these are the extremists that if, in fact, something – if Putin fails and he is moved out of office, who might take power from him? And
right.
that is where we get in a much more complex scenario right
yes,
now.
Yes, we do. Of course we do. There's no question about that. You know, I never thought that Putin was anything but, number one, not a decent man, but a very intelligent chess player, for lack of better terms. And I think he really blew it in this particular game, Jimmy. I just cannot see any rationale for him escalating this thing. But then again, I couldn't see any rationale for him even starting it in the first place. Jimmy, about 25 minutes. You want to go into anything else?
I mean, I'll finish it up by saying, you know, people often, their expectations exceed their capacity.
How about ability?
Yeah, well, and I think he had some thought he could accomplish. He had military advice that said he could take out the Kiev government very quickly, take control of the situation and stabilize it, and that he miscalculated. And now he's paying his people and really tens of thousands of Russian soldiers are paying
right.
a very dear
oh,
price,
you bet
as well as the Ukrainian people.
They're paying for his mistake with their lives. And I really, really have a lot of empathy for those folks, Jim.
Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.